more than 2-3 months. I was doing very nice. I used to make a lot of money. Yeah. And one night, a man came over the Greek. He knew I was Greek. And he says to the man, can I talk to Johnny private? The man just says, yes. So the man just called him, says, somebody over there wants to talk to you. So I went over there. He introduced himself to me, says, I'm Mr. Arahakos. I am an engine. And I work for the studio. And we pick up acts and we put them into the movies. That time was silent movies, wasn't like today. And says, I'm looking for a guy like you. I said to him, what I'm going to do, he says, first I'm going to take you there to the studio and let them see you, and then I tell you what to do after. So finally went to the studio, they showed me, they said to him, yes, we need him for some part. That time, Rodolfo Valentino, he wants to make a picture. He made a picture. The studio was in Astoria, Long Island, Washington Avenue. Paramount Studio was right there. He says, Rodolfo Valentino wants to make a picture here, and we're looking for the guys to set the screen. So this guy, he's all right because we still got two more to his kind. So the guy says, what he has to do? He says, when the time comes and we call him to shoot the picture, he's going to be here. We're going to put him on a horse with the Spanish custom hats, and we're going to give him one guitar. Well, there'll be three horses there. One horse on every one of them. They're going to hold guitars, and we're going to tell him exactly what to do. When the picture starts, the horses are going to start going onto the window of the building, and Valentino, he was going with his horse right in the back and throw the a rose up in the window for his girl to catch. And we're going to be under playing the guitars, and that's the scene. The scene will take only 4 minutes. The studio will pay $10 a minute. If the first time it's not right, we didn't shoot right, we have to shoot again, then he's going to get same price again, $10. So, this is the price he's going to get. Oh, when I heard that, I was making $18 a week. So when I heard that, oh boy. Finally, they called me, the day came, we shoot the picture. And the time came about 12:15. We heard a bell ringing. That means everybody sit down for lunch. They had a lunch there for us early. So I sit down to have a lunch. And I was eat my lunch, and I was turn my head, and I saw Rodolfo Valentino there. He was looking at me. I didn't pay no attention. I said, all right, this is the guy is looking. I was eating there. I turned again. I saw him looking at me again and smile. I said, well, what the hell? I didn't pay no attention either again. And I went back. I was eating there. And I turned around again. And I look at him. But in the meantime, laughing at me, and I start laughing, you know, at him too. Finally, his manager come over there. Valentino's manager. He couldn't talk English either. He says to me, what are you laughing, Valentino? He says, I'm laughing. When I see this guy over there, the hair, I love his hair. I give anything to have his hair. So the guy, look at me. He gets my manager. He says, look, Valentino's looking. You know, Johnny, and he's crazy about his hair. He says, if I only had his hair, I don't want nothing in the whole world. Of course, he had a hair, but it was flat, and he had about a pound Vaseline on. So the managers, they talk over there, and they start laughing. So my manager comes to me and says, you know what, I will laugh. I said, no. He says, Valentino is crazy about your hair. He says, he'd give anything in the world to have your hair. And I said to him, Mr. Chuck, he says, look, you tell his manager to go tell him. I give him my hair if he gives me his eyes. We exchange. So that his manager went over there, he said to him, and he started laughing the hell out of it. When I finished the picture, they called me into the office. They gave my check, was $40, 4 minutes. They said to me, we need you again. But you have to go to the studio and get 4 pictures. And we have it here at the studio. And all the directors, they're going to come here. If they need anybody, look the pictures. We have your telephone here. And we call you to come here if they, we need you again. But you have to go to the New York studio. 45th Street and 5th Avenue. It's a special studio, but everybody goes there making pictures for us. I say, yes, I'm going a couple of days there. And I thought, finally, I went to the studio. I explained to him. He says, yes, they took 4 poses. When I finish, and I said to them, well, when they're going to be there, says a couple of days, but you got to leave the money here now. I say, yes. How much is? He says, to me, it's $39. I say, $39? He says, no, this is the special studio and That's only $39. Well, I can argue with them. I paid the $39, and I said to them, to hell with you. I'm going to make money. I'm going to give money, my money, to the pictures. To hell with you and the pictures. A couple of days later, I met one of my cousins, Kostas Frangas, Kost Frangas. He was number 3 mafia of New York. He knew I was working at the office studio. And one night he came with somebody. They saw me dancing there. And he says to me, when you finish, Johnny, I want to talk to you. I said, what is it, Costa? He says, it's something special. I said, all right, in half an hour I'm finishing. He says, all right, we wait for you. My partner's got to go. And we talked. I finished, we went down for a cup of coffee. And he says to me, look, the guy you saw with me is my partner. And we talked. He says to me, to make you a big star, a dancing star. But you have to become member to the mafia. I said, come member to the mafia. He says, yes. They're going to spend a lot of money to make you a star. But with one thing, you have to do what they tell you when you become a member. I said, what do you mean? I heard so much killing going with them, you know, they, he says, yes. If they tell you to go kill somebody, you have to go kill them, because they're going to kill you if you don't, if you're a member. But that's the rules of the society we belong to. I say, Mr. Costa Frangas, thank you very much, but I'm not going to join a union of yours, or what it is, society, what do you call it? No, I don't want to get mixed up with the mafia. He says to me, you're going to be loose, because in the studio you work in, there is another boy. We're sorry. If you don't get that chance, we're going to get that boy from the studio and we make him a star. And who was the next boy? I didn't know. Fred Astaire. I said, no, I don't care what you're going to get. I don't know what stars you're going to make. You'd pass. You want to be my cousin, please don't bother me with that union or society, what you call yourself. Please leave me alone. At the apartment where I was living, we were 3 boys, me and George Stavlas, the boy that I was born in the same house in Perez, and we had another boy Spartan. His name was Louis. He was working. He was a cashier at the Automat in New York. And he used to play a little guitar. And Stavlas took a mandolin. as long as she was playing guitar, stabilized, bought a mandolin and he started to learn to play mandolin with the Louis. And I got jealous. And I said to myself, I'm going to get something too. Finally, I met somebody and he was making violins, you know, someone guy in Fallon. At the place I was working in daytime. So he made me a violin. And I paid him that time $25. The violin was more than $300 because the guy didn't know the valuable anyway. So he gave me the violin and I came home. What the hell I know about the violin now? Yeah, I have to go to the teacher and think, but finally he said, look, I'm going to try. And I tried and I tried. It was a little hard for me. Until I met somebody, he had a little accordion. I said, hey, that's for me. I went to Prodromidis, New York, on 8th Avenue, 41st Street. Then I bought a little accordion there. I remember I paid $49 for it. I said, I get a small one. Soon as I learn, play a little bit, I get a little bigger. So I bought the accordion and I start with the boys to play. We would play, you know, we did not know, but you just. And we say to ourselves, look, why we breaking our necks there? Well, let's get a teacher to come here to pay him a little money to put us in line. Finally, we find a guy, Mr. Dominicis. He was good musician, mandolin and guitar. So we called him and we used to pay him $4 once a week. He used to come once a week. Friday, 6 o'clock. He used to stay to 7:30 once a week. And he used to teach the guy the mandolin and the guitar. But with me, I asked him about me. He says, look, Johnny, I don't know anything about accordion. I don't want to get your money for nothing. But I'm going to give you something there that in case you make up your mind to learn the accordion, you're going to use it later, not now. I said, what are you going to give me? He says, I'm going to teach you how to count the rhythm of the music. I'm going to teach you how to read music and how to transport music from one key to another one. This I can do for you. Because if you make up your mind to learn the accordion, those things, you're going to need it. I said to him, go right ahead. He says, but next corner, it's the Greek studio, Apollon studio. And there's a guy in there. He teaches also mandolin, guitar, and his partner, he's teaching piano and accordion. I said, look, he says, you go ask him. I went to him. This homie says, yes, you're going to get 2 lessons a week, $5. Mr. Badges. That happens, my nephew married his daughter. And I went over there to him the first week, and I saw myself, this guy don't know anything about accordion. He don't know how to put his fingers on, he don't know how to move his fingers. What the hell, how is he going to teach me if he don't know nothing about accordion? And I said to him, I'm going to stop. He says to me, why? I said, no. I don't think I'm going to learn anything with you because you don't know the accordion. He says, what do you mean I don't know? I said, look, I can see your fingers. You don't know what to put your fingers on, how to move your fingers. How are you going to teach me to play accordion if you don't know? He says to me, but I teach you, I said, but I don't know what you're going to do with the others, but not with you. I'm sorry, I'm not coming. So, I left him, and I engaged the biggest accordion player in New York, number one, Mr. Pedro Diello. I went to see him, he couldn't talk English. A little bit he was talking, and I couldn't talk English or Italian. He told me, you're going to take 1 lesson a week, was $5. I said, I don't care. So I went, stood with him about 3-4 months. The poor guy, he saw that, he knew it, I want to learn the accordion. But he didn't know how to make me, to explain to me, to understand. And he felt sorry. He says, look, I got his money. And he told progress because he can understand me, to talk, the way I talk, the way the music. And what he did. The last lesson I want to take with him, he says to me, Johnny, I want to talk to you. I say, yes. He says, I don't want you to come here to get your money because you don't understand what I'm telling you about music. And I hate to get your money. But I found a teacher for you, Mr. Cavadillas. He's Italian, Greek Italian, and I call him and I talk to him, and I want you to go over there to him, and he's going to talk to you Greek, and he will explain to you everything. And when you learn good, and you want to move up, he says, you come to me again. Is that right? I say, Mr. Triero, thank you very much. I hate to get your money, but you go to Cavadillas. I went to Cavadillas. I stood with him more than 2 years. He teaches me the accordion exactly what I want and everything. At the meantime, I had this instruction from the other guy, the mandolin, how to read music, how to transport and everything, and I came close to what I want. But my mind was to write music and songs and things like that. And that time, I organized a little orchestra. I had two mandolins. I had Louis with the guitar and two other boys with the guitar. I was the accordion. And we start practicing, you know. Finally, when we learn about 6, 7, 8, 9 songs, we say to ourselves, can we do a little better than that? Can we go to the radio stations and we start playing, you know, Greek music, because that time was no Greek, no records, no anything on the radio. Wasn't the television that time. Finally, I knew a friend of mine, Mr. Stamos. He was working for the Bitsnut Company, salesman. And I explained to him, he says, wait a minute. He said, let me talk to my company, because we want something like that to go on the radio. And let me talk to the manager. Finally, the poor guy, he talked to the manager. The man says, yes. He says, yes, yes. And said, tell them to find the radio station. He says, I got the radio station. He says, my wife's a relative. He has the station. WWRL. And she says, you're going to talk to him. So finally they talk, and we would start playing on the radio. We open it now. We won the first Greeks and the Greek music on the radio in America, 1931. And we played it. And we got such a big name. Every Saturday and Sunday we had dates to play. Weddings, christenings, dances. Every Saturday and Sunday we were booked up for 6, 7 months. Now, mine was, I used to play nice, yes. But I didn't know how to write music, to write to, because it was a lot of songs. I didn't know, I had to write the music and explain to the boys, because I was the accordion. They used to read music, but they, no. They didn't have no idea how to compose song or anything. To compose, write song on it. So finally, in that studio, the radio, there was a man there, playing the organ, very big, famous. But he became partnered with the radio station, and he was playing the organ in there. His name was Edward E. Feimer. He was Hungarian, Danish-Hungarian. He was 4.5 feet, and he was playing the organ. 1929, when opens the Paramount Theater in New York, he was playing the organ in there. He stood so many years until he became partner with the radio station. And he left his job and he started working for his studio. And my manager, Mr. Stamos, I explained to him I want to learn. He says to me, no, let me talk to Edward. So he took to the guy. Organ there. He says to me, you want to learn music? I say, yes. And he says to the famous distillant, I never do anybody thing like that for anybody, but it's just for you, because you know how you like Johnny. I'm going to teach him. I said, not for nothing. He says, no. I say, no. He says, all right. He says, you want to pay me? Give me $4 every lesson. I say, all right. He took me and his son for a year and a half. And he made me what I want to be. It is fun to compose music. See? And he told him all the tricks. And I start write music for the boys there in this radio program we had. And we stayed there a year and a half broadcasting. After broadcasting, the boys, they start, some of them they got married, some of them they got business, and everybody was pulling out from the studio, you know. And finally, I told the Mr. Stomas, I said, look, I don't blame the boys. Some of them, see, they're going to get married. This guy, the star player, is going to California. He opened a bakery. They can stay no more. So we have to split the company, the orchestra. He says to me, Barabban, what are you going to do now? Everybody's calling about the great music to the radio station. I said, look, what do you want me to do? He says to me, let me talk to Billy, to the owner. He talked to Bill, to the owner, he says, as long as they going, can Johnny come here with the accordion? And just play just 2, 3, 4 songs. Just, and fill it up with it. I said, look, I'm going to come there, play. I let Mr. Feimer be at the organ. And me with the accordion, I give him the music that I'm going to play. And I play the music, and he's going to have the music. We play two together. He says, that's a good idea. And we start playing accordion and organ. Of course, he turned the keys to a different instrument at the organ, and you ought to hear that sound. Was so beautiful. I stayed with them about more than 9 months. And after I said to Bill, that to the final look, I'm going to be an orchestra, I'm going to join the union, and I'm going to be an orchestra leader in New York. So, you don't mind, he says, no. He says, what you did to us, that's enough. But anyway, if you want to get stage, you can stay. And if you want again, maybe later, you want to once in a while come over here and give us a song, we're going to be glad. And I shake hands for him, and I want to organize my orchestra. And I joined the union. And then there was playing all over. I used to get the boys from the union and started to recording. I'm playing music for the recordings of 502 records in different companies. Of course, I made my own 6 LPs. One is mine, the Astor, and the others I made and I sold to a record company with a guarantee for 15 years. After 15 years, those songs will come back to me. Now it's more than 20 years, so the songs, they are back to me. I'm the boss again. And I used to go to the studios, bar, Victor, Columbia. I used to record them. Until one day, I had a partner, Charlie Gardins, plays the clarinet. And his car put it the great Benny Goodman clarinet on his car because he was playing good. And then I went to Columbia to record some songs with him, and the manager was the Columbia manager, Mr. Porges. He was a Jew, very nice boy. Today he's the owner of the Capitol Record Company. I don't know if he's still living or his sons, they take it over. He's the owner of the Capitol Record Company today. And as we play the song, you know, our song there, he came inside to the studio and he says to Charlie says, "You got any card in your pocket, your card?" Charlie says, "Yes." He says, "Give me one." Charlie gets his card. Now, 2 doors down to the other studio, Benny Goodman was recording at the same time. And he was recording the song of the, they call it As the Angel Sing, some a Russian song, As the Angel Sing. So he took the card, Charles, he went to the Benny Goodman and says, "Benny Goodman." He says, "What is it?" He says, "You're not the only Goodman around here. We have another one here." He says, "Oh, Charlie Gardins." He says, "Yes, I know his records. I know he's a good musician." He says, "No, tell him I want to meet him before. I want to meet him as soon as we finish our record." So he came back to manager, says, "Charlie, don't go away, but I'm going to have a surprise for you." So finally, 2-3-4 minutes, we see the Benny Goodman walk in. Now, Benny Goodman is about 7.5 feet. Charlie was only 4.5. And he bent down, Goodman, he hugged Charlie. He says, "Charlie, I know," he says, "you play good clarinet, but I want you to do me a favor," he says. Charlie says, "What do you want?" He says, "You're going to play me a chamico, because I heard your records." And when he says, "When you do the Outlive Stantopapuri was in. The last one you take outly says, I will hear some of that, because that's the best you got in your records. Outly. Charles says, okay. So we play something, and then he come back to that. Koda, we call it. Outly. And Ben Goodman, he went crazy. Soon as he stopped, he grabbed Charlie and he says, Charlie, I know you got my name on your record. I'm on your card and few of your records. Use my name because I know you're a good man too. And after that, I started with my orchestra going around. If I didn't have anything with my orchestra, I used to enjoy all the orchestras. We had a date, making dates, and a happen was convention in New York at the Meadowbrook, and Frank Sinatra, that he was there singing. But we were at the same program, and Frank Sinatra was there singing with the Tommy Doyle's Orchestra at the Meadowbrook there, and we had a 2 days convention there. We played. I was playing the Greek music. They were playing the American. And after many other things, I joined the orchestra, Cowboy Orchestra, and I went play with him. His name was Chuck Palmer. He was the head Cowboy Orchestra in the United States, and I stood with him, played with him about more than 7-8 months. And after that, I said to him, I get you nice accordion player because I have to go for my own. So he says to me, Johnny, bring the boy, introduce me the accordion to play on your place, and if you change your mind, he says, you come with me. I said, thank you, Chuck. And I start going my own. And then I start to compose my own songs. Now I have so much experience. And I write any kind of music. Turkish, Arabian, Greek, Spanish, and American. I compose close to 200 songs, different kinds. Turkish, Arabian, Greek, Spanish, American, and most of them I have English lyrics. Songs I remember 100 years, 90 years song. I remember them from when I was kids. I used to hear them. And I, most of them, I wrote the music, and I put it English lyrics, most of them. Turkish, Arabian, and Spanish. Until today, until today, I became international music composer. I write anything, if anybody wants anything, for shows, for records. I'm ready to do it. And my life story is ending until today. They call me Doctor of Music because I have so much experience to write music, good music. And this is ending my story and my life's story. Making, I don't know, the best coffee, and everybody rave. Even the captains, they discover it. Instead they drink the coffee on the bridge, they used to come to the mechanics, trapezzeria, table, to talk, and at the meantime to drink my coffee. So one day, the first mechanic, Mr. Halas, he asked me, "Johnny, where do you come from? Where you was born?" So I tell him, I was born in the sea. And a little bit story, in Manamu, in a Sirigani, και βγήκα στη σειρά από τη θάλασσα. Και από εκεί ήρθα στον Περέα και εκεί μεγάλωσα. Ο πατέρας είναι από τα Δωδεκάνησα. And he says to me, "Ωστε Σιριανάκη είσαι." Αλλά, "You can call me anything you want, Σιριανάκη." He says, "That's your name, Σιριανάκη. But not space in the boat. They didn't know my name, they called me Σιριανάκη. Με τον καλό καφέ που κάνεις." One afternoon, the fourth mechanic, he came, he says, "Johnny, can I have a cup of coffee?" So I made for him coffee. He drinks coffee, he says to me, "I know you don't make so much money with your pay over here, but why don't you get a couple of bottles of Metaxa and bring it to America, and you're going to sell it. You're going to get $2 a bottle." That time, the Metaxa cognac was only 75 cents American a bottle. He says, "To make a little money, I know you need money. You have a big family, we know that. And to make a get a couple of bottles, everybody's good. So, you sell it to American, and you make a few bucks extra." I say, thank you very much. But if they catch, says nobody gonna catch you because everybody's got it. I say, thank you. Anyway, we came to America. We docked the boat. In 2, 3, 4 hours, a policeman came inside to the boat. Irish policeman. And he came to me. He says to me, Johnny, first time I see you. I say, oh, in English, he could not, you know, great. But, you know, hook, crook, we understand. He says to me, Everest, cognac, cognac, in Greek. No, no. Oh, Mule, why? Everybody brings cognac here. Well, that doctor, I didn't know. He said, next time when you come, you bring how many bottles? As much as you can. But in a, I'll set the bottle of water. I'll take it. You what's at the bottle? That's $1 or $2 a bottle. That's what I'm doing. I'm going to boat and I collect. Everybody's got it. And I said to myself, all right. Well, anyway, the second trick, when I came, I bring about 5 bottles. He saw the cognac, says to me, that's all you bring, only 5 bottles. I say, I don't know, how many bottles? He said, no, get, bring some more bottles. I say, wait a minute. Yes, I know a couple of boys that they have. He says, go tell them to give you the money. Here's the money. Give it to them, the money, $2 a bottle. Ήξερα εγώ κανένα δυο μέσα εκεί που είχαν, αλλά δεν ήξεραν και αυτή τη μαρκέτα ακόμα όπως τι γίνεται. What? Well, they didn't know just like me. Then I asked, they gave me the cognac, they gave it to him. He said, next time, bring it as much as you can, as much as you can. I say, all right, when I come back, I'll bring some. Okay, we finished the trip. We went back. The second trip from Piraeus to come to America. was a very wealthy Greek from Chicago in the boat coming to New York, from New York go to his, he was very wealthy man, and he had a daughter about 13 years old, but she was so ugly and fat, she didn't look like a lady, a girl, and the captain used to talk with her father used to bring him up to the bridge and talk to her father because she was well known, Greek. And he ordered a cup of coffee. So his camarotes, he says, look, I know you like Chinese coffee. I'm going to tell Johnny to make it a cup of coffee for you. I know, he says, Captain, his camarote, I tell Johnny. He says, look, best to Johnny, Makani Dio. And I get to Mr. Macri. So the boy came, and he asked, this first captain wants the coffee up there. He asked me to do it, but I know he don't enjoy my coffee. He loves your coffee. So please make it. I said, all right, I'll bring it. go ahead. I'll make it and bring it. So, yeah, I went up to the bridge. I give him the coffees. In the meantime, his wife there and his daughter. When he sees on me, the coffee, you know, really, she was looking at me like, never saw anything. She looked at me and smiled. And smiled. I gave him the coffee, and I left. The next day, in the afternoon, Captain sends camarote, says, tell Johnny to make two more coffees for the afternoon and to bring it up here. Johnny, Eric, camarote, you know, the boy came, his camarote. So he told Nick, two coffees for the breeds. The captain wants it. I said, all right, I'll bring it. I had nothing to do anyway. So I make the coffees up there. And her mother was there, and her father. They look at me. Finally, it was 6 days before we come here. 2 days before Fritz, the American, a captain, he calls me up the bridge, says, Johnny, you know Mr. McCrae's in a very, very rich man, plus his money. Just to call a taxi to this afternoon, he called it today. He called it late this monastery. Μάμα, δεν μπορούμε να πάρουμε το Γιάννη στο σπίτι μας. Δεν τον έχουν όλοι. Μ' αρέσει ο Γιάννης. Είναι όμορφος. And Captain, he says, let me talk to Johnny. So, he talked to me. He says, Johnny, look, Mr. McCrae's. Something. I don't know, he says, you want to go to his house? He told me he's going to take you, he's going to send you to school, and, you know, to be his son-in-law, because his daughter is very crazy about you, and that's the only daughter he has. I say to him, now let me think, I can say yes, I can say no, dear, because I have a family too, and my family wait for my pay. He says, he will take care of your family too, because he's got so much money. I say, no, I can say yes, I can say no. But I was looking at her, she was like it. Didn't strike to me. I said, look, what the hell am I gonna do with money looking at that bundle? And the second day I said, Captain, he said, Mr. McCrae, I'm sorry, I can't do because I have family to support. And I wouldn't do anything. He says, I told you he's going to take care of your family. I said, no, 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 finish. So, we came to America. Of course, the policeman came here. I was bothered again. He says to me, that's all you got? I said, no. How many do you want me to bring? First, he said, what about the rest of the boys? I said, they sold everyone. He's got his. He sold them. He says, look, if you hear anything, I'll come tomorrow, okay? So, I said, all right, if I find him, I'll serve it, you hear. So he left. Now, το τρίτο ταξίδι. Ήρθαμε εδώ, στην Αμερική, and the boat was full cognac, the Θεμιστά Κλής. Captains, mechanics, even the lancierides, the pot washers, everybody had a more than a box cognac. Capitane, the captains, they had two rooms, cognac, closed in two rooms, full cognac, beside us in the boat. As we come to America, somebody squealed that the boat is coming and it is full of cognac. A telegram came into the boat before we reached today, see? They notified the captain. When the boat comes there and all the passengers go out, since the body is empty, cleared with the passengers, they're gonna close every door to the boat. Nobody to come in, nobody to get out, because the custom house is gonna come to search for cognac. The captain, he went crazy. He called everybody, you know, the mechanics, everybody who had cognac, for a meeting up the bridge, and he explained to them, says, what are you gonna do? But the second mechanic, he says to the captain, he says, wait a minute, I know somebody, for he wants cognac, all we got. And captain said, where's the guy? He says, I know the guy. He said, don't worry about it. If you want him, send him telegram, or I sent him telegram, and I explained to him what's going on before we arrive, or the duck. Finally, the mechanic sent him telegram and explained to him what. So telegram came back again, you know, in the boat, by a cinema, and say to him, don't worry about it. I want to know if you got plenty stuff. So the guy says, yes, we have plenty. And that's that. He says, don't worry about it. He says, look, the boat is going to arrive such day, okay? The next day, the passengers are going to start to go out. A few of them, they're going to wait for somebody to pick them up. They can leave the same day because they come from Chicago, they come from Philadelphia, and then... So, few of them, they're going to remain in the port. Okay? And I will take care of that. So the mechanic explained to us everything. He says, don't worry. So we asked him, who is this guy? What's his name? So the mechanic says, the only thing I know is Rho Sigma. Rho Sigma, Mr. Rho Sigma. Rho Sigma, Rho Sigma. That was R.C. Williams Company. So another telegram came, don't worry about, just keep still. So before the next day comes and the custom house is going to come, we're going to bring boat right next to the ship. He said from 12 o'clock in the night to 4 o'clock in the morning, he will be right next to the boat. And I want everybody to bring his cognac into the... But, Mauna they call it, but, budge. He says, they're not going to sleep, but they going to work to bring the cognac into the... And the tombo is going to come 4 o'clock, take the boat away from the ship. And the next day, let them come in. And, but, he says, but one question. I want to tell everybody in the boat to keep one bottle of cognac into his room. I put it on his table and open it, the bottle, and screw, break the seal, and put it on the table. When they come in, you know, looking for it. But they're going to ask him, you got any cognac? He says, yes, I got a cognac. He says, come inside on the table. Yes, drink some. They're going to say, that's all you got? He says, that's all I got. A bottle, that's all you got. Here, get some. And on any place they went there, the same as everybody's. So, they start searching the place, boat open, every room, every. They couldn't find nothing because the stuff was gone. And the captain says to the custom house, did you find anything? He says, did you look all over the place? The guy says, yes, we didn't leave nothing. I says, no, you didn't look the whole place. But I want to show you something. Somebody make mistake, they tell you that we have. I'm going to take you downstairs. There's a couple of rooms there. You didn't know those rooms. You didn't open those rooms. I'm going to tell you, if we had a cognac, we're going to put it in this, those two little rooms. Nobody knows those two rooms over there, if we had a cognac. He says, come down, she took him to his room. If we had a cognac, we would put it right here, and nobody will find it. But, no, we didn't. Say, we got a few bottles for the crew. So they said thanks. They went out with the boat, and everything was hunky-dory and clean. The captain, after that, he called everybody. And he says, look, How many bottles? You put it there. Everybody says, six, seven, says, okay, $2 a bottle. You should give us some money. He made so much money, Captain, from his own and the own. When he quit from the ship, Captain, he bought his own ship. We left America and we came back to Greece and was ordered from the Embiricus office, the boat should go to the dry dock for cleaning and will be 15 days. So everybody was off the boat. It says, when the boat is clean again, we're going to start getting most of the group back to the ship. All right, we wait 15 days. They clean the boat. They bring it to the pier and they start taking the crew back. But most of the crew couldn't wait 15 days and they went with the different boats. You know, they went to their homes. I don't know what happened. And they got a little new group. So I went to the custom room, to Limina Hill. And I give my book and I said to them, I was in the boat for three trips and then I like to go again. He looked my book. He says to me, you can't go with that boat. No more. I said to him, why? He says, in 5 months, for the tops, they're going to call you in the army. He says, your age, that age, and your time is coming up to go to the army, the Greek army. I say, what? I couldn't tell them I was 2 years younger because he only looked at my papers. And I said to him, now wait a minute, well, I want three. He says, look, if I let you go now, you're never going to come back to Greece again because you're going to stay in the United States. I said, no, I went three times to the United States. If I want, I will stay from the first time I went to the United States. He says, I'm sorry, but I can't do nothing because I only take orders. All right, you can ask for those cards. He gives my flag, my book. And I went outside and I wait as maybe, you know, the boys that come in, the mechanics, and I shake hands with them and I explain to them that I'm not going to, they don't book me because they may have seen things that I don't know. And I wait there, and the third mechanic, Mr. Stamatis Mendrinos, he was the most beautiful man in the boat. He came from a very wealthy family. There were two brothers. One He had two factories in Perez, used to make men suits to order. Very big name. The next, Tonayo Spirit and Mr. Perez, others, Filonus. He had two stores there. And the other one, he became mechanic, Mr. Stramatis. He looked at me sitting there. He says to me, "What are you doing there?" I say, "Mr. Stramatis, this is the situation." He says, "What?" He says, "Come with me inside." He takes me inside, says to the guy, "What's wrong with this guy?" So he explained to him, he says, "Look, I only take orders and this is the place." "No, this guy has got to come with us." "Hey, Mr. Stramatis, I can force, I'm making my own rules." He says, "Look, I demand." At the meantime, the second mechanic came, Mr. Kairis. He came in and says, "What's going on?" So he explained to him, "They do, το Σιριανάκι, δεν θα μας το δώσουν να έρθει πάλι να μας κάνει καφέ μέσα. Ποιος θα μας κάνει καφέ μέσα?" Λέει ο Καΐρης, "Nothing doing, λέει. Το Σιριανάκι πρέπει να έρθει μαζί μας. He's got to come with us." At the meantime, the argument there, here comes the first mechanic, Mr. Halas. He came and said, "What's going on?" He says, "Did you hear that? Such a thing. Look, they must think of the Sriyanaki. They don't let Johnny come in the bus because some screwing up going over here." So Mr. Hala says, "Look, can I talk to somebody besides you?" He says, "Look, I give you the telephone, but I don't know." He says, "Give me the telephone." He says, he opened the bigger guy into it and explained to him, "Look, I'm the first mechanic, the second mechanic, and the third mechanic is here. This is the problem here. We have a boy with us three times. If you don't come with us, we're not going in the boat. The three of us, the mechanics. And I'm going to call him Biricus, and I tell him on the office what's going on." So the guy says, wait a minute. Don't start anything. The guy explained to you, says, "Explain to me, but the boy is three times came to America. If he loves American, he will stay for the first trip." He says, "Wait a minute." He calls the other guy, says, "Look, let him go through, sign his passport." The guy, he opened the book, says, "Look, every job in the boat is taken." "It's full, the boat is filled now." The mechanic says, "No, you gotta find something there for the guy to come in the boat." He looked, he says, "Wait a minute. There is one position. In the kitchen, they need pot washer." He says, "Put him pot washer, and I, when he comes to the boat, we'll take care of our business." So he signed me. I went to the boat. He went down, first mechanic, he went down to the chef and he explained to him all the situation. He says, "Look, Sirianak, he's got to come to his place and the other guy from up there is going to come down." So I called the guy. I tell him, "Something mistake happens here. This position should be yours. They make mistake, the women are here. They put you up there. So you want to stay here or you want to go out, stay? And he said, no, what the hell I care? As long as the job for me, I do it. I think so. I went back there. Now I was the last free come to America. In the boat was uncle, because he came to Perez to take his niece to bring it to America, to Chicago, to get married. Now the girl was about 19, and our brother then about 35. The girl, he didn't know him, he only looked the picture they showed her. Well, of course, in a picture, you always, you look young. And the poor girl, Jinaka, but she was the most beautiful first girl in the boat. And since we left Perez, 2-3 days, I saw Mr. Stamatis, the third mechanic, was talking to her. You know, he was coming close. Talking to her. And they were coming close to her. Look. He was young. She was young. Both good looking. So they start, you know what, getting along. Now, in the boat, there were four mechanics. The first mechanic, they worked only 4 hours, 8 hours a day, split hours. The first mechanic was the fourth mechanic. He was from 8 to 12 in the night. 8 to 12 in the night. Master Stamatis, the third, was from 12 to 4 in the morning. In the morning. And the other one was the rest of Mr. Cadis. So, in the night time, Mr. Stamatis, when he was finished his work 4 o'clock in the morning, they talked with the girl. He says, the only place we can meet, it's up on the boat, you know, the top. Boat, there's the boats, the safe boats they call it. Says, you open Mushama and you get it in the number 13 boat. And when I finish, I will come up to the boat. 4 o'clock in the morning, everybody's asleep. By what? I know what's going on. And a couple of times, I know the time he was. And I follow him, and I saw him going to the boat. He didn't know. I know he was going to the boat. I said, what the hell? He's doing 4 o'clock in the boat. And I want to give him no shoes. And I went close to the boat, and I heard him smooching. I say, oh, here we go. I went back to bed. And something was going strong. And one day, it was after about 2 o'clock. A girl came up there and says to me, "Johnny, what is Mr. Stamatis?" I said, Mr. Stamatis, he's down in the engine. He's working. He says, "I know. How can I go down there to the engine?" I said to him, "I'll take you there." So I went on. There was a little door open and you go down to the... But across from the door was the coffee house. And everybody was afternoon going playing cards, drinking coffee. And I took the girl and I opened the door. And I say, "You go down. When you go down, you see Mr. Open the door, and I put the girl in, and I closed the door, and I went upstairs. She went downstairs. Some screwy guy saw me, opened the door, pushed the girl down there, and I locked the door, and I went. He went right away. And called his uncle, you know, the girl's uncle. He says, "Well, so the girl with the guy Camarotes, this mechanic course, and he opens the door and put the girl down and he locked the door and went upstairs. So the girl is downstairs in the engine. So, Harold starts to make it known. Another guy. He knew me very well. He came rush. He said, "Johnny, such. He says, "And this, you know, her uncle is getting very mad. I don't know if he's worried what I'm going to do." And so I went right away. There was a different door from first mechanic's room. Right next was a special door. You open, you go down. I went through that door down and I find Mr. Stamat and I tell him, "Mr. Stamat, such thing happened. Please see what you can do, because Harold is going to come down here with a policeman and looking for the girl." So he says, "Wait, Benny," he takes the girl to a different door and brings up to the second deck. And he says to me, "You go and lay down into your bed." Mr. Samad says to the girl, "Go lay down on your bed." So that's what she did. Nobody saw her. She went going to her bed. And they came with the policeman. They saw Mr. Samad. He says, "My niece was here, came down, we saw the Sirianaki open the door and bring down here. She's down here in the..." Mr. Samar says, "What do you mean? Go ahead, look if you find her." So they look at the policeman, they look, listen, they couldn't find nothing. They came up through the door
to the got to the coffee house. And another lady was coming, and he heard the conversation. So he says, "You're looking for, you know, she's inside sleep into her bed. She's in the bed sleeping. What the hell are you guys doing?" And they went over there, they saw her, you know, lay down. Oh, and of course he couldn't stomach that. Anyway, a big commotion starts now with me. The great question is, when I go to America, I want this Sirianaki to be close to the custom, because when I go back to Greece, I'm going to bless the whole thing, what was going with my niece and with Mr. Stamatis, what do you call this guy? And I know what I'm going to do. So the big situation starts now with me. The next day, the captain called me up the bridge. He says to me, "Sirianaki, you know what's going on?" I said, "What's going on?" He says, "You don't know what's going on with Mr. Stamatis and this Kritikyaki going on." I said, "No, I don't know what's going on. I see Mr. Stamatis talking to the choir, yes, but I don't know what the hell is going on. I don't know. I have no slightest idea." He says, "You don't know, and you don't want to say." And he raised his hand to slap me. I said to him, "Wait a minute. If you slap me, and when I go to Paros in Greece, I'm going to Limanahil, and I'm going to explain everything that's going on, you hit me, and you know what's going to happen to you." He says, "I want to hit you, but when I get the right time, I'm going to knock the hell out of you."